morning, Chicago. 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Dave Ennett is here. Mary Vandeville as well. Steve Brzanich.
Do we get some new music?
Yeah, well.
Well, new old music.
Even better. Joe, Super Joe.
Yeah.
The mouse to his computer has been disconnected. And you know what that means. 6 to 8 weeks on the shelf.
Yeah, the mouse is looking for the cheese.
The mouse is looking for the cheese.
And he's lost.
It's a great way to start Monday, although I would take that song any day.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. How was your weekend, Mayor?
It was good. It was quiet. I didn't really do much. It was great.
All right.
And I got a lot of stuff done, but just boring stuff, you know, lawn work, sewing, blah, blah, blah.
Did you go to the Air and Water Show?
I did not. Yeah, I was going to go, and my husband did not want to come downtown and face the crowds.
Yeah, I can understand that. And it's funny, too, because I feel like there's two types of person in Chicago area. Someone, and this is really, used to be White Sox Cubs or ketchup on a hot dog or no ketchup on a hot dog. But I think the best way to look at it is Air and Water Show or no Air and Water Show.
Yep. Totally agree. Yeah. I heard a lot of people make that very point this weekend.
Yeah. There is something. I had a long conversation with the mail woman who drops off the mail in the morning it doesn't matter when, afternoon. But she was like, "You're not going?" I'm like, no, I'm not going, because their planes are flying over. And I'm like, no, I was an anti Air and Water. And she kind of shamed me. She was like, it's great. Take an Uber. That's
that's the problem. If everybody takes an Uber, you can't drive around in the city.
I just thought that was funny. She just thought it was like a parking issue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it's okay.
It's not just the parking.
How was your weekend, Dave?
My weekend was great. It was busy, but it was good. We continue the wedding circuit. So
Dave has been to like 100.
This was our third wedding in 4 weeks,
and they're all destination. A lot of them.
Yeah, no, this one was here.
Okay, good.
But and it was great. But it's a lot of weddings and
a lot of money.
Well, yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah.
But no, it was nice.
And you, it was downtown.
Downtown.
So did you avoid the Air and Water Show traffic?
Not really. How could you?
How could you?
So drove.
They didn't plan that right, did they?
Well, actually, it was funny. My wife reminded me that we got married the weekend of the Air and Water Show in downtown.
Good job, Dave.
But it wasn't as big a deal back then as it is now.
We got married in November, and I remember this because the same thing. We thought, oh, it's November, it's downtown. Our reception was at Maggiano's, and we forgot and didn't recognize that it was the first or second year of the Festival of Lights parade.
Disney parade.
Sure.
Oh, that's a major
right, but
deal.
Not something I would think about at all. And
that's something else that was not as big when it started today.
Right. So it was. I remember there being a lot of traffic to get to from church to reception that we didn't think about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we kind of did this thing on Sunday or Saturday where we just kind of went to some of the antique shops in Chicago on the Grand Avenue corridor. Some great interior design type place. It was a fun afternoon to do. And we walked into this place, Salvage One, which is on Hubbard Street. It's a great place. It's four stories of just, you know, couches and stuff that's been sort of salvaged, if you will. And there were two weddings going on.
You're supposed to say gently used.
Gently used, right. Yes. There were two weddings going on. Like, we walked in as customers, just kind of, they let us just walk around, but we kept avoiding brides getting their photos taken. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I just felt very like we were intrusive. I would not want to be the bride. There was one point where we turned the corner and the bride and some of her bridesmaids were like, you know, putting makeup on and things. I'm like, I don't know you. Sorry, I'm wearing shorts. And I was just looking for an old couch.
And now they all ride around in a trolley or whatever and take pictures at every location downtown. So you're going to run into them everywhere.
Oh, they have to take that one
the
shot.
The Chicago shot at the theater. Mm-hmm.
They do the shot on LaSalle Street, which is on the medians on LaSalle Street right by the bridge. And then the other one is on the Kinsey Bridge by East Bank Club. They're always on that bridge taking pictures. Mm-hmm.
When my daughter got married last year, they went to Union Station, but you have to have a permit.
Oh, really?
So the photographer, I guess, wasn't aware of that. So the wedding party walks into Union Station, and they got kicked out.
Oh, wow.
Which doesn't seem fair.
Catching a train.
Yeah, right.
Trying to get that famed shot of waiting for the metro change.
Yeah.
Getting on an Amtrak, right?
I think they were there because it was raining.
Yeah.
So they had to go inside.
That's surprising. I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't either. They didn't either.
There have been a couple of times where I was shooting stuff downtown and for fun that security at buildings will be like, you can't shoot on this property. Mm-hmm. And they'll cite terrorism or something like that.
Which,
but they're like, you know, because you, I don't know, you're maybe you know, checking out the, doing some recon on the building or something like that. But really, we're just doing comedy bits. So, so anyway, all right, coming up, we will get the top six of six. Steve will lead us into the
lead you where?
Lead us into the top six at six, right?
Yeah, I just walked in on this wedding conversation. Now, you got married this weekend?
Yes, I did. Yes, this is my fourth wedding. No, we Dave was at his, was the third wedding?
Third wedding in 4 weeks.
How about that?
Of the same person?
Well, no.
Yeah, you go to weddings like a 22-year-old just got, or 25-year-old, his friends are just getting married out of college.
Well, now what it is, it's friends, kids, and kids... Our kids' friends and our friends' kids. Yeah. Getting Mary's going through the same thing.
Yeah. Well, nieces and nephews, too, a lot of them.
And how many do you turn down?
No.
Or maybe I don't have any friends.
Dave,
maybe that's the problem.
I'm with turn you. Down any of them.
I had no weddings this week.
No, yeah. I mean, they've all been great. But
I like going to weddings.
I wonder why I'm not getting invited to friends' kids' weddings. Mm. I got to start making a list of my friends, find out if they have kids, and when are they getting married.
Yeah, you'll give them a 20.
So I'll give them a present. Yeah. I don't want to go to the
wedding. I would invite an Uncle Steve, just because you know he's got the
I
wonder if the rumor's gotten out.
Right.
I wonder if the fact has gotten out that, you know, you I'm not showing up.
Yeah, you're a decline. So like, well, why?
But then why wouldn't you send the invite?
Yes, that's a good reason to put you on the list.
Yeah. You better not be picking the food and then not showing up. You know how you pick what you want to
I've
eat.
Never done that. Have you done that?
Not show up after picking the food?
Yeah, after you say yes.
No.
No. What about this? Do you go to the reception and not the wedding? Because I think if you're invited, you got to go to the wedding.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
I agree.
Oh, I don't think you just go to the party.
I think you have to go to the wedding.
I think you say no. If you can't go to the wedding, you say no.
They're not going
to
know you're there or not.
How about, I used to make the problem all the time before I was more organized, married, where buddies would get married and I just forget to tell them I'm coming. Like, I just be like, awesome, man, I'll see you there.
Yeah,
like,
but you're talking
whole
about
process, you know, that you have to send in.
But you're talking about the more casual wedding, right?
Yeah. I'm just talking about any wedding because I was a single guy who didn't check his mail.
Right. Right, right. With nobody going, human beings don't act like you do.
Yeah. Right. We once had an employee here, and they had the
wedding. Let's name them. Who were they?
No. But the wedding ceremony was held at like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning in a church, and then... There was a reception that night at a banquet hall. And I said to my wife, I said, well, look, we got to get dressed up and go to church and go to the ceremony. And then it was like 5 hours later, we get dressed up again and go.
I don't like that.
But you got to wear something different then, Dave.
Well, I probably.
I think that's asking a lot of your guests. That's like a
huge gaps.
Yeah, I agree.
And that happens all the time because you can't help it. You know, the church has a problem. They've got two weddings that day, and then, you know, the reception.
You got a place you really want to use. No, I get it, but I think that's asking a lot. That's like a destination wedding. Hey, could you swing by the Bahamas because you're one of my 10 closest friends and I really want you to be there? Well, that's a lot of money.
And that's when some people blow off the wedding because they're like working at 11 o'clock in the morning and they can't get theirs.
Good thing it wasn't during football season, Dave.
Yeah, Dave.
Well, if it were during football season, I would not have been there. I mean, my kids didn't get married during football season. They knew better.
Right. The hammer says no. 6:19. Make it 6:18. No, make it 6:19. Lots on the show, as you would imagine. We'll get to the top six at six next as we get cranked up on a Steve Cochran show. Oh, it's Monday. Feels like it, doesn't it, kids? Show number 1204, and the fifth anniversary of this show is 2 weeks away.
Wow.
Wasn't it Labor Day when we started?
It was right after Labor Day.
Yeah, first Monday Monday is Labor Day. It was Tuesday. It was the Tuesday of Labor Day week, I think,
it was?
Right? Yeah.
Oh.
I think it's right. So we've got a special show planned.
Yeah, absolutely.
But first...
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
We have a new alternative facts this morning, and it's truth isn't truth. We'll play the audio coming up. Rudy Giuliani on with our friend Chuck Todd yesterday. And the phrase, my head will explode, it actually happened. Chuck's head exploded right there on Meet the President.
He
never happened before. Tim Russert, the late, great Tim Russert, his head never exploded. All the previous hosts' heads never exploded. But yesterday, Chuck Todd's head exploded. And why wouldn't it? Truth isn't truth. Now, the immediate reflexive response from people who think Trump is being picked on again is, well, Clinton said what is the definition of is? Yeah. Well, it depends on what the definition of is. Let me, and it's the same thing when you go back to Obama. Let me just try to clarify this one more time. Bill Clinton is not the president. Barack Obama is not the president. If you want to have a symposium to talk about whether or not Barack Obama was a bad president and a terrible person, have at it. He has no power over your life at this point. So let's deal with the present. The present is Donald Trump. Is he a problem or isn't he? I think you know where I stand on this.
Well, I thought that the concept, and I don't speak for anyone who voted for this president, but there was this idea of drain the swamp or get away from politics as American politics as usual. And what we have right now is the parsing of truth and truth isn't truth and playing games with words. That was, I thought, some of the things we wanted to get away from, especially after President Clinton and his is, what's the definition of is. People were sickened by that and the way that people were just trying to twist words in the wind. And yet here we are in 2018, where Rudy Giuliani is up on a talk show saying, well, truth is not truth. Truth isn't truth. And I just, I wonder where people stand when it comes to the politics of playing with words like this in 2018.
Well, there will always be those who will defend him, yeah, Donald Trump. And that percentage could be as high as 30%, 35%. When Nixon was nearly thrown out of office and resigned, he had 28, 29% approval. Those people won't change. However, if you truly care about this country, you want somebody in the White House, in that Oval Office, who is going to represent you, regardless of party, to the best of their ability. And that brings us to item number two.
Truth isn't truth.
Don McGahn is the attorney who represents the presidency, not the president. The president has to have his own attorney. Don McGahn represents the president of the United States by way of the president's office. Therefore, Don McGahn is not beholden to Donald Trump. Don McGahn apparently did 30 hours of testimony for Bob Mueller. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of questions. Maybe they had a nice dinner. Maybe it's one of these steakhouses where it takes 3 or 4 hours before you get the check.
Maybe it's a lunch and they decided just to stick around.
Yeah.
No one else was waiting for the table.
And it was going well.
Right.
30 hours. Trump spun this yesterday as I told him he could go. Every bit of reporting on this story says otherwise, that Don McGahn felt like he was being set up like John Dean when Richard Nixon said, hey, why don't you go write a memo about everything you know about this and then get me that memo so he could throw John Dean under the bus. John Dean went in and said, here's everything you need to know about Richard Nixon. Don McGahn apparently went in and said, here's everything I know. Do with this information what you will before he felt. Imagine working in that scenario where you feel you're just moments away from being thrown under the bus because Donald Trump shows no loyalty to anyone who shows loyalty to him.
Are you talking about John Dean the rat?
Yeah, that's the other thing. What president of the United States talks like he's a Sopranos extra? Yesterday, one of the tweets called John Dean a rat in capital letters. This is just, it's insanity beyond belief. Next.
Truth isn't truth.
Oh, Rudy. Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. Asia Argento, or is it Argento?
Yeah, I think it's
Argento.
I looked to say Asia.
Asia. Oh, I thought the last name was the problem.
Yeah.
Asia Argento.
Yeah.
And Leni Weinstein, accuser and voice of the Me Too movement, reportedly paid a young actor almost $400,000 after he accused her of sexually assaulting him while he was underage. The New York Times reported Sunday the actress and director, who became one of the leading faces of the Me Too movement, after accusing Weinstein of that assault, arranged to pay that money to her own accuser in the months after the Weinstein story broke. Now, this is a good way of muddying water. It doesn't change the fact that Harvey Weinstein may have done all the things he did to her. I don't even think Harvey Weinstein's denying it, right? He just said she was a willing participant.
Yeah, I think what Weinstein's has been casting couch the entire time. This is what we do in Hollywood, or this is what we've done for years and years and years. I don't think that he has said he hasn't had a relationship with her.
Next.
Truth isn't truth.
Another violent weekend in Chicago. As of this morning, 5 people were killed, 52 others wounded in shootings throughout the city. Well, let's not say that. Shootings where? In the neighborhoods we normally see the shootings?
I haven't looked at the...
In the war zones?
I haven't looked at the breakdown of where the shootings
were. The south side,
were.
Mostly.
Single shooting Friday wounded 7 people, including a 3-year-old boy in the Inglewood neighborhood on the south side. And God bless every one of you that live in those areas, because I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it day after day. Next.
Truth isn't truth.
Life-threatening waves on Lake Michigan. Dangerous waves up to 5 feet high and strong rip currents will create life-threatening conditions on Lake Michigan beaches throughout the day today. We're expecting strong thunderstorms possibly rolling through this afternoon. And there will be a knucklehead or two or more than that who will be out there will have to be rescued by EMTs and the Coast Guard and various other folks putting themselves at risk because somebody thought they could beat those waves. And finally,
truth isn't truth.
I think I like that. As previously mentioned, Michael Kopech and your Chicago White Sox. Well, nicely done. Now, this prospect Kopech, what can you boys tell me about him?
He had like about him is that he has long blonde hair.
All right, Dave, do you have anything deeper than that?
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, we do have some of he's 22 years old.
22?
The top pitching prospect in the White Sox organization.
So you like long walks in the woods and puppies?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he does.
Okay.
He does. Okay. He's already been the subject of a 30-for-30 documentary. He hasn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues yet. 7-7 this year with a 3.7 ERA at Charlotte. But over his last 7 starts, 4-0. And if you break it down even a little further, over his last 3 starts, 27 strikeouts, wow. 0 bases on balls.
Pretty
and
impressive.
That's the key.
That was the key because they had said they weren't bringing him up because of control issues, and he responded by those amazing stats. So good for him.
When does he start?
He will start tomorrow night against the Minnesota Twins at Guaranteed Rate Field.
It'll be nice to see a nice crowd out there to see the kid, right?
I would imagine they will get a nice crowd.
Yeah. My brother and I bought tickets.
Yeah. You bought tickets?
Yeah, buddy. I support the squad, man.
It's nice of you to buy tickets, but you do know we can get you tickets.
I don't need no freebies.
As the White Sox flagship.
I don't need no freebies, as we said.
Well, Reinsdorf also doesn't need your money, so next time you need tickets, stop paying for them.
Give him money for food.
And by the way, Joe, if you're the 7th caller, now I can get your refund. Let's come back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 and 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Doctor?
Doctor.
Doctor?
Doctor.
Doctor?
Doctor.
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 And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Most right now.
Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing great.
You and I are swapping some texts. You had quite a weekend.
I did. We had a lot of fun this weekend.
Was this at Butterfield Country Club?
No, this was at Chicago Golf Club.
Wow. Well, yeah. One of the most legendary courses in the country, and Ben Crenshaw swung by to hang out with Doc and his brothers. Was that how it worked?
Yeah, how about that?
Wow. Yeah. So what was Crenshaw doing in town?
Crenshaw's a member there, so he came up from Texas and played for 3 or 4 days, and just he just loves the course and thinks it's a great place, so he was just hanging out. Couldn't have been nicer. You know, he's just a regular guy.
And, well, all the tour guys that you know, I would have thought you've met him before, but not so much?
Oh, no, I've met him probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 times. Yeah. I know him. I actually spent some time with him at the Masters with Steve Melnick the year I was down there, so, yeah.
Yeah, so and one of the great putters of all time. But you did something yesterday. Now, Pete Zimmerman on this show just came back from a big tennis event. This would be the equivalent of going back to the wood rackets of the 60s and 70s. You played golf this weekend in an event with Hickory Clubs, right?
Yeah, so the 4 of us, the 3 brothers and I, we played Chicago golf with Hickory Shafted Clubs, which is very cool. This company, Louisville Golf, that makes these hickory shafted clubs are just phenomenal, and it's just a lot of fun, and you just realize how much technology has changed, but really how much it more is based on the archer versus the arrows.
Yeah, it's the player, not the sticks.
Yep.
So your brother David, who you mock regularly, your little brother, shot 79?
Yeah, how about it?
Why would he ever go back to real clubs?
I know. So I told him. I said, you wouldn't have shot 79 with your regular clubs.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a fun round to watch. Played with the same ball the entire day, and it was just a fun game to watch.
Now, Dave, and it's here. Dave, you remember Gutta Percha?
He wasn't actually the player that you thought he was. Yeah, the ball made of feathers.
Right.
Remember, you used to hit that when you first played?
Yeah, it was tough, actually. It's more of a challenge than you think. But, Doc, do they have hickory hybrids?
No.
No?
It's actually funny, Dave. When you look at these clubs, they start with two irons, two iron, three iron, four iron, clubs that people don't see anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the drivers, the head of the driver is, you know, a third of the size of what, traditional drivers are now. So you're more concerned about whiffing than you are about how you get trying to hit it on the face.
Now, I have one of these Louisville Slugger Company wood head, persimmon head drivers, like the ones I used in the 70s when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're about 47 pounds compared to the stuff we use today. So what's the best drive you hit all day?
I had some really good drives. Matter of fact, I hit some drives where I normally hit my Titleist driver right now.
For real?
It was unbelievable.
Well, you're a talented guy.
Yeah.
All right, let me jump in here. Aretha Franklin passes, and we're being told this was a rare form of the disease that she had. What do we know?
Well, she had pancreatic cancer, and it's unfortunate. It's probably one of the worst cancers around. You know, we talked about brain cancer. That's pretty bad, and pancreatic cancer is bad as well. And that's what she died from. Pancreatic cancer is very difficult because often by the time we find it, it's beyond a treatable stage. So it's very frustrating for the doctors and just very sad when we look at mortality rates. You know, even the people that survived the first year from diagnosis, you know, is like only 20%.
Doc, what makes it one of the worst cancers? What is it about pancreatic that has such terrible mortality rates?
Yeah, the bad thing about it is it sits in the pancreas, which is a very vascular organ, and it's allowed to grow and expand without really causing much symptoms. So you don't even know that it's there. It's just continuing to grow. And then by the time it grows to a point where you start to have the symptoms, now it's beyond reach. It's beyond that simple, let's just go in and cut it out, because it has wrapped itself around arteries and vessels and invaded into the stomach or the gallbladder or the liver. So it's one of those where it grows rapidly, and by the time it grows to a point where you have symptoms that really mean something, it's often too late, 80% of the time.
Aretha had surgery back in 2010, and she had a right to keep it private, and she did. But now we think maybe that was pancreatic cancer surgery even back then?
Very possibly. You know, people, you know, I call it winning the lottery. Is, you know, you come into the emergency room or you go to your doctor's office for something totally different, whether it's, back pain or some other issue. And they do a CAT scan of you, and they say, oh, by the way, we saw a small spot on your pancreas. Those are people that have no symptoms whatsoever, and those are the ones that they can go in and do surgery, and it's essentially a cure. But it's those ones where it's usually found because we're looking for something else.
Well, yeah, I had that with a pulmonary embolism. I had a pulmonary embolism, two, a year and a half ago, and they immediately said, we have to check for cancer, for pancreatic cancer. So one indicates the other?
No. But they're there at the same time, and the scan usually will be and cover all that portion of the body if they did the chest and the abdomen. So they're going to
look. So they're looking for a reason for the blood clot.
Correct.
Got it.
Yep. Yep.
Right. Doc, will there be a moment in the medical future where there will be research and more of a push to figure out how to detect pancreatic cancer early?
Yeah. That's the biggest struggle right now. There's no blood marker. You know, the only way we detect it, like I said, is with a CAT scan or an ultrasound. It's very difficult because there's no really pattern of, oh, this person is at a much higher risk. There's a couple genetic issues, but besides that, this is a very sporadic illness that we can't say, oh, because you smoke, because you did this, you're at a higher risk, therefore we're going to start to screen for you, like lung cancer. This is one where we would be giving people a lot of radiation with a very low yield to find those very early, because we're talking, you know, 50, 60,000 cases a year in the United States.
Let's come back and talk about something completely different, and that's a measles outbreak.
Yeah.
Stand by for that. More with Dr. Kevin Most, or as I like to call him, Old Hickory. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. Back to Dr. Kevin Most. We've got a measles problem?
Well, we do. You know, it's not a huge problem, but it's kind of interesting. It's been out in the news here last week, and just thought we'd at least touch on it. That, yeah, we've seen kind of a measles outbreak across the country, and it's one where we think measles. We don't think it measles anymore, but it's out there.
What are we looking for?
Well, that's the probably the most difficult thing about measles. It's extremely highly contagious illness that, you know, people cough and sneeze, and you don't get the symptoms then until 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later sometimes. So the bad thing is that it's highly contagious and goes out there. Now, the vast majority of people here in the United States are vaccinated, and those are still protected. So the people that are getting it are actually people who are not vaccinated who live in the United States or are coming in from other countries where vaccination rates for this is extremely low.
So we don't need boosters.
Well, not yet, and I wouldn't say that because the cases that we've seen for measles have been people that have been not vaccinated. Now, interestingly enough, when you get the measles vaccine, you get what we call the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Rubella is the three-day German measles. That one has pretty much been eradicated, and that's great because that one can cause a lot of birth defects. Our concern now is coming up with mumps, actually. And if you remember in the spring, we talked about the outbreak at Western Illinois University of mumps this year.
Yep.
And what we're finding there is, just like whooping cough, vaccinations that we thought may be lifelong may not be lifelong. Mm-hmm. So now we're looking and saying, all right, we may need a mumps booster before going into college, but that's being studied right now.
You know, with the globalization, the way that the world works today, are we just inevitably going to see more diseases that we thought to be either under control or eradicated come back and rear its head in other ways?
Absolutely, Justin. I mean, that is probably the biggest concern is, like we talked last week, the world is getting a lot smaller, and we're bringing a lot of people into the country that haven't been vaccinated and now are exposing ourselves to them. Used to be that if we got enough people vaccinated, even if we had an outbreak, it was very small because we call herd immunity, because vaccines are not 100%, but if you get a 98% protection rate, it's going to be very few people that are going to get this. Now what we're finding is, like I said, those vaccinations that we thought were saving us, giving us lifelong protection, we may not, and it's going to be exposed as we bring people in from other countries that now reintroduce that virus into the country.
I have one follow-up on that. As we talk about vaccinations and obviously, you know, doing all these vaccinations with kids, how fast can the medical community work when there needs to be a new vaccination or an update on a vaccination because something is back?
Yeah. So you realize we can work fairly quickly with some of the more simple ones, right? Think about flu shots. We have that new vaccine every year. So they're working on the vaccine. Actually, it's done and it's out there already for next year's flu season. So we work on flu vaccines very quickly. When you look at some of these others, they take a little bit longer because we haven't tested them yet. Take West Nile, for example. You know, we don't have a full-blown West Nile vaccine out there yet, because we haven't had the ability to test it on enough people. So some are slow, and then others are very quick. The bad thing is, like Zika, think about that. So they're working on a Zika vaccine. But they have to prove that it's safe, and they have to prove that it works before they can spread it out to the entire country.
Doc Mo, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. You never said what you shot yesterday.
I shot 89. And I'll tell you, the reason I shot 89, I probably had the best caddy in the world. And Mary Faith, a sophomore at St. Francis High School in Wheaton, couldn't have been a better caddy and just the sweetheart of a kid.
Yeah, and apparently got a little game because, what did you win?
We won the Caddy Challenge, yeah.
Nice.
Mary Faith and I won the Caddy Challenge where, now because Mary Faith was playing against the other three caddies were two high school players and one guy who plays in college. She got an extra shot and a throw, and she used her throw at a very opportune time.
All right, nicely done.
Yep.
Kids got a game and strategy.
Yes.
Heckle and congratulate your brothers as you see fit, and I'll talk to you later.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
That's Dr. Kevin Most going to work at Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
A really big man with ethics, even though he has no height.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Really, I got to talk to John DeCoste because Eric Edelstein, who's in here every Thursday with Pat, is really, really upset that he hasn't got a zippy theme song of his own. Pat Brady joins us now. I thought Edelstein was going to walk out last week when we didn't have a theme song for him. Did you have that sense, Pat?
We walked down the hall. He was banging on the doors. He was
terrible. Not happy. All right, I have lawyer questions for you there, Mr. Attorney.
Sure.
Pat Brady, before he started swimming in the deep end of the swamp with all the other politicians, he was a prosecutor. And as an attorney, you chase the bad guys down. So I have just general questions because I know you follow all this stuff and you understand it at a level we don't. Let me start with Don McGahn. Don McGahn goes in to talk to Bob Mueller, and the New York Times sourced reporting. The New York Times became the New York Times because they're good at what they do. The New York Times said he did 30 hours of questions and answers, and he went in because he didn't want to get John Deaned the way John Dean almost did by Richard Nixon. So what do we know?
Well, that the former counsel for the Office of the President is now cooperating fully with the Mueller investigation. And to me, it ties directly into what the president was thinking when he fired James Comey. That goes directly to the obstruction count. It doesn't mean they're there yet, but it means he's fully cooperating, which you can tell by the president's reaction yesterday morning. He's very upset.
And the president, he is the counsel for the office of the president, not Donald Trump's attorney. So does Donald Trump have jurisdiction over whether or not he can go? He can claim executive privilege, but he can't tell him not to go, right?
No, but they already, privilege basically is the communications between the lawyer and their client. They're deemed privileged to, you know, promote free flow of communication between the lawyer and the client. You're exactly right. He represented the office of the president. But the reality is most of this had already been waived. They made a decision early on to fully cooperate. So even if the president wanted to assert the privilege, a lot of this has already been disclosed, and thereby it's waived. And McGahn doesn't really have a choice.
Where does this go now? Because it's going to get a little awkward at work.
Well, McGahn's gone.
What do you mean gone?
No, you mean, I'm sorry, what do you mean by awkward?
Well, awkward as in McGahn and Trump have to face each other at some point, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but of course, it's completely awkward. But the Times piece was interesting, and they said that McGahn's worried that he's going to get pegged with this. I think that's the tension. Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of tension. But he doesn't have a choice. I mean, the president's team early on made the decision to do this, so it's kind of like their own fault.
This goes back to the Dowd and the Ty Cobb time, right, where they said you need to cooperate on all levels. So when you hear the president say we gave him a million documents and we've cooperated, well, your previous guys did, maybe allowing these folks to go in without executive privilege is your definition of cooperation. But until you show up and you talk to Mueller, that's not cooperation.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't see, just if you were advising him, there's no upside in him doing it. Politically, there's a lot of downside, but legally, why is he going to do this? I don't see how he does it. I mean, Bill Clinton did it, and he did a masterful job. But with Trump, I think there'd be a lot of problems, particularly with the obstruction charge. And a lot of this conversation back and forth on the form of the interview, are they going to do questions? Are they limited to certain topics? I think those are just delay tactics.
All right, let me flip this to Rudy Giuliani. Do we have the clip? Tell me when you have the clip, Joe. Rudy Giuliani from Chuck Todd's Meet the Press yesterday. And Chuck Todd, Pat, I don't know if you saw this because I know you had a busy weekend.
I did.
But Chuck's head literally exploded when Rudy Giuliani invented a phrase. And again, for people who reflexively want to jump back to, well, this is no different than when Clinton said, it all depends on what the definition of is, Bill Clinton's not your president. Your president is Donald Trump. And since your president is Donald Trump, he's the guy you need to be concerned with positively or negatively. So let's focus on the president. You got it, Joe? Roll it.
Look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is truth. I don't mean to go like...
it isn't truth. Truth is in truth. The President of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth is a truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what
No.
This is going to become a bad
Don't do this to me.
Don't do truth is
Donald
a truth
Trump,
to me.
Donald Trump says, I didn't talk about Flynn with Comey. Comey says you did talk about it. So tell me what the truth is.
Don McGahn might
know. If you're such a genius, Don McGahn doesn't know. If that's the situation,
okay.
They have two pieces of evidence. Trump says, I didn't tell him, and the other guy says that he did say it, which is the truth.
You don't get to define the truth.
Wow.
The truth is the facts. This is that muddying of the water thing that they all majored in, but you could tell Rudy realized, oh, boy, I got to get that one back.
Truth isn't truth.
The point made in that clip is that, well, let's see what Don McGahn knows, and now the special prosecutor knows what Don McGahn knows. So whatever Mayor Giuliani said, Don McGahn may have said something totally differently. Plus, with the obstruction, Trump made other statements around the time of, including to Lester Holt, on why he did it.
Right.
So there's much more than just these two. But Mayor Giuliani, I don't know, it was something to see when he said that yesterday.
It's
unbelievable.
Beyond the wording, which is just egregious, but the idea here is that he doesn't want to put the president in what he talks about, a position of perjury. Is that something that is a real worry for Mayor Giuliani?
Well, I think they documented that the president has publicly stated 3,500 lies to this point in his presidency. So with Donald Trump, yeah, you're always worried. Remember, you talk to a federal agent, and if you don't tell the truth, if you intentionally lie, that's a felony.
Yeah, and you don't have to be under oath.
Yeah, you're lying to an FBI agent, exactly. If you talk to an FBI agent and you lie to him, it's a crime. So, yeah, they're certainly worried. But one thing I've heard a lot of, and I heard it 20 years ago with Bill Clinton, this term perjury trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't a prosecutor forever, but I was for a long time or a while, and I never saw a prosecutor intentionally. A perjury trap is just a myth. You just don't operate that way. Mm-hmm. But they know the risk. If they testify, if they lie, they're in trouble.
We got less than a minute here. Manafort jury, why are they still out?
Don't know. If I were the prosecutors, it would make me a little nervous because it's 2 days on a case that looked pretty strong. And the second thing that would make me nervous is they asked for a reasonable doubt instruction. And in a criminal case, the government has the burden of proving the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And that term is never defined in the jury instructions. So if they're having that argument, which is the argument that the defense made in their closing arguments, it would make me a little nervous. Now, read a bunch of analysis over the weekend. Most people say this is normal for a case like this. Governor Libby took 10 days. I think Oliver North was 12. But we'll wait and see. But I thought over the weekend that was not a great sign for the prosecution.
And it could be there's one holdout, right? And all they need is one.
They only need one. But also think of it. The reason I was thinking it would be 2 days, jurors tend to like want to get it done. Like on a weekend, you want this done and you can go home. They're not sequestered, so there was not as much push to get it done on Friday as there might have been had they been. But I'm not sure if it means anything, and there could be that one juror, and trying to read the tea leaves on a jury is something that's probably not real wise. But if this gets into Wednesday or Thursday, I think there's big problems.
And, you know, there's without being sequestered, witness tampering. So if your Domino's pizza delivery guy has a thick Russian accent and really wants a tip, you probably have a problem. Thank you.
Well, you know, they're instructed not to look at that stuff.
Yeah, of course they are. Of course. Yeah. Thank you, Pat.
All right, guys. See
you. That's Pat Brady. We'll have him on again this week, obviously. Let's come back in a moment. Man, have we got a great MVP today. Should we say who it is?
Sure. I'm
tell people who it is.
It is Sister Mary Jo Sobieck, who is now
the nun with a heater.
She should be called up. Michael Kopech, of course, coming up for the White Sox. But yesterday, the nun from Marian Catholic comes through with a
strike. And I got to ask her about bouncing the ball off her bicep. That was cool.
She's good.
She was talking to somebody, and she wanted to warm up. So she had a mitt and a ball, and so she gave him the mitt. She stepped back at about 45 feet and threw a bullet. I was like, wait a minute. And he threw it back to her, and she fielded it barehanded. And I was like, okay, she looks like she can play a little bit. So we started talking to her, and she says, yeah, she played center and short. And I said, can you play for us? And she said, sure.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Ricky Renteria trying to close down a deal now. They're in high-level talks at the White Sox for Sister Mary Jo. Pete, help me out. Sobieck,
yeah.
Sister Mary Jo Sobieck. Let me ask Pete Zimmerman before we pick up the phone, because Sister Mary Jo is fresh off her Good Morning America appearance. You bring in the best people for the MVPP. You search high and low.
Mm-hmm.
You scour America.
Absolutely.
And Sister Mary Jo, after yesterday, blowed up real big.
Mm-hmm.
So how'd you nail this down? Called in every favor?
I called in every favor. As I, you know, I've went to Catholic school all my life.
Was prayer involved?
So I prayed. I prayed on it, like Lovie Smith. Yeah.
Now you're a fan of sports. You're an athlete yourself at the highest level. And when you saw her heater, what did you think?
I thought it was all right.
Dave, what do you think of her fastball?
I thought it was excellent.
Justin?
Good command.
Yeah, strong.
Joe, did you like Sister Mary Joe's fastball?
Oh, it was a strike, easily.
All right, so maybe Ricky Renteria's seeing a little something here. Sister Mary Joe Sobiech joins us now. You know what my favorite part was, Sister, and good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. My favorite part was when you bounced the baseball off your muscle in your arm, your bicep.
Thanks. It just came natural to me.
Okay, where's the skill come from?
Well, you know, I had a brother call me yesterday and say, remember I taught you that, but I don't recall that. I've always just been, you know, pretty athletic and coordinated, so I think it just kind of evolved.
Well, you look like you're having a time of your life, and by the way, you should be looking like that when you're out there.
Absolutely. As an athlete, that is, like, top-notch. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Top of the mound, I couldn't go from the grass. I had to be all in.
Sister Mary Jo, there is a lot of pressure when you get on the mound there and you have to throw. You realize it's, you know, it's 90 feet. The concept is daunting to some. You'll see celebrities get up there and bounce the ball in or possibly get, you know, not get anywhere near the strike zone. So how did you approach your event yesterday?
By the way, she had 60 feet 6 inches. 60 if it was 90,
sorry,
she'd 90, be thrown 60. Out of somebody
yeah,
stealing.
Sorry, I apologize. 60 feet. Thank you, Steve.
Well, part of it, my bouncing it off the my arm was to make it natural. I had to give myself something to relax with. Otherwise, you're absolutely correct. So having played shortstop and center field, I'm used to throwing off, you know, a hop or getting a catch. So I thought to make it the most natural, I had to put myself in motion. So I did a little something that was just going to be, just make it relaxed. Otherwise, you're right. It's daunting.
When was the last time you played?
Organized softball? It's been a while. I mean, I've gone home on my home visits in the summer, and I've done some rec leagues, but that's probably been 10 years ago. But I throw the ball around a lot. You know, I golf, I shoot hoops, I try to stay in shape, so I keep myself agile.
Are there any other nuns that, you know, have any game that you can play catch with?
No. I'll be honest with you. I'll be selfish here and make a plug for vocations here. Our life is not just a love of sports, but it's a love of God and keeping your energy and your motivation and enthusiasm for life. And I'm the youngest in our community here by about 10 years. And so the kids at school are participants, and I go to the gym and I go out to the fields and kind of, you know, mess around with them a little bit. So it's fun.
That's what I'm telling you, Justin. You got something here. This is the church has something here. They send Sister Mary Joe out, and everybody goes, oh, the nun's here. Big deal. And you start throwing the ball around with these kids. They're going to love it.
Well, Sister Mary Joe, I'm reading your story in the USA Today. Good Morning America has obviously gone viral. Is it surprising to you that just the idea of throwing out the first pitch and throwing a strike has grabbed America's attention, the world's attention?
Absolutely. I had no idea. I don't even know how that happens. One of the students said to me, Sister, this is going to go viral. I said, what does that even mean? How does that happen? So, no, I had no idea. Matter of fact, I wasn't even going to stay for the whole game. I was going to go home sooner, but there was a lot of excitement and energy, and it was just a fun night. It was a really good night.
So, do you have any tips for the prospect, Michael Kopech, who's coming up tomorrow for the White Sox, their top pitching prospect?
You know, I would say, you know, you just have to be yourself, do your best, and let God do the rest, right?
That's a great advice for everything, right?
Mm-hmm, yep, and just, you got to do you. You know, you got recruited for a reason, so don't change your mechanics now. You just keep doing what you're doing.
Do you know what the White Sox Lucas Giolito said about you?
No.
This is the guy.
I'm curious.
This is the guy that caught your pitch, obviously. First off,
right,
he said,
right,
ow.
I do know that.
You started out with ow.
Ow.
But after the game, said she had the whole routine. She had it planned out. I was just lucky to be back there. She threw a perfect pitch. You literally have made it to the big leagues because you got another big leaguer using cliches to talk about your skills.
That's great. That's great.
The White Sox tweeted one of the most impressive first pitches of all time. You know, they didn't include me in there, and I've done it a couple of times. I actually threw it through the backstop. She was pretty good. Ricky Renteria said she was pretty good. I'm like, wait a minute. She fielded it barehanded. You may have heard the clip when we played you in. But I'll tell you what, I loved it. I love your attitude. Why'd you wear number 60?
Well, I wore number 60. It's the 60th anniversary of our school here in Chicago Heights, Marian Catholic. Our Dominican sisters from Springfield in Illinois, we founded the school in 1958. And so it's our 60th year. And so they picked me to represent the sisters still being here after those 60 years. And I was happy to have that opportunity and to hopefully do them proud.
How good a golfer are you?
You know, I can hit the long ball. My short game is a little, you know, a little rusty, but I can hit the long ball.
There's a lot of prayer that goes on the golf course.
You got to keep it on the short grass, as they say, right, fellas?
Keep it on the short grass. God, please let me make this putt. Yeah. Please, please.
That's right.
Sister Mary Jo, it's an honor to speak with you, and I love your attitude, and we need it on a Monday morning more than ever. Thanks for being the most valuable person on the planet.
It.
Right there.
God bless you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Mary Jo Sobia.
How great is she?
Great.
She automatically goes to one of the top five guests all time, just like that.
National media picking it up. Obviously, Good Morning America. This is a bona fide viral sensation.
I like when they go, you're going to go viral. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Sister Jean right now is like, challenge accepted.
We were going to talk about that, but she was so in her own zone. I didn't want to bring Sister Jean into it. But you talk about a powerful twosome, right? Her and Sister Jean?
Mm-hmm. Listen, there are a lot of good stories about sisters. When I was in grade school, we had one of the teachers I had, Sister Mary Regina, she could kick a soccer ball.
Really?
She would come out in the field and play with us boys, and she was a great soccer player.
Like everybody else, they have jobs, they have downtime.
Yeah. And pastimes and hobbies and stuff, yeah.
It's just hard in the habit.
That's what I don't understand. The clothing is not conducive to sports.
It's very cumbersome.
Maybe it is.
Because it's loose?
Yeah, maybe because it's loose, you're like, oh, wow, I'm such a better pitcher.
Boy, it's a good thing Bill Veeck is dead, because you got to believe he would have those guys in those uniforms tonight.
Yeah, or because it's religious, maybe it's actually a boost. Maybe there's some higher power boost that comes with that as well.
Could be.
Possible.
She's an impressive lady. Impressive. So are they reshooting Angels in the Outfield now? And they're actually using her?
I think so, right?
I mean, come on. News next, 720 WGN.
Why is everybody so obsessed with the President of the United States that they can't even begin or finish a sentence without mentioning his name five times? It's kind of weird. And it's infecting people on the news now who fancy themselves security experts.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Can't decide who it's better to be today. Manafort, McGahn, Rudy Giuliani. Oh, wait, Ryan Nobles, those are all bad, aren't they?
I don't know. I think you could make an argument that Don McGahn might be sitting in the most comfortable seat right now. It's always, I think, better to be a cooperating witness, especially if you've got nothing to hide. And I think that's the position Don McGahn feels that he's in right now.
You know what you sound like? You sound like one of those rats. Like one of those rats I read about on the Donald Trump Twitter feed this weekend.
I do have to say, though, Don McGahn still has to go to work in the White House today after what was probably a very uncomfortable weekend. So I would imagine things might be a little bit icy in the West Wing this morning.
I was talking to Pat Brady about it a few minutes ago. Can you see that on a Monday? Hey, how was your weekend? Oh, hello, Don. A little awkward. All right, so let's explain for folks who maybe are catching up here. Don McGahn is the counsel for the office of the president, not Donald Trump's personal attorney, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's a very important distinction here. And it actually, you know, if you believe everything you read in the New York Times this weekend, and I absolutely think you should, it appears that he feels very strongly about that role and that distinction, the difference between representing the President of the United States himself versus representing the office of the presidency. And it's a very important distinction, because if you're thinking about protecting the presidency, that would mean protecting it against someone that might be in that job who's attempting to obstruct justice. And there was a calculated risk taken by a group of criminal lawyers that were representing the president, who aren't anymore, we should point out, and Ty Cobb and John Dowd, who thought that transparency and openness was the best policy. And they told Don McGahn to go into those meetings with Robert Mueller without the benefit of attorney-client privilege, which meant that he was free to say whatever he wanted to say. And Robert Mueller had a lot of questions for him because they talked for more than 30 hours. And basically what McGahn's people are saying is that he told the truth. And so whatever the truth is could either be bad or good for Donald Trump. But the way you see the Trump team reacting, you get the sense that perhaps it's not all good.
Yeah, and you wonder about that, too. To the tirade this weekend on Twitter made it seem as if, I mean, because I thought the New York Times piece said exactly what you said, that there were 30 hours of testimony. We don't know what that testimony is. It could be good. It could reaffirm. It could confirm some of the things that the president has been talking about when it talks about witch hunt and things of that nature. But it seems that Trump, it's just looking at his Twitter feed, has gone in one direction and one direction only.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think is so interesting about this is because what I think the New York Times story revealed to the White House and to the president's lawyers is that they really don't have any idea what Don McGahn told to the special counsel. And that's got to be a bit of an unsettling feeling because they initially thought that McGahn's interview would be helpful to them, perhaps because they thought McGahn was more loyal to the president himself versus the office. And I think the one big thing that Rudy Giuliani or the president's lawyers or even the president himself has not responded to was the tone of the email of the New York Times story, where they specifically said that Don McGahn was concerned after he was told by John Dowd and Ty Cobb to go into these interviews without attorney-client privilege that he was being set up, that he was going to be the fall guy if the special counsel determined there was obstruction of justice. And that's when he turned and decided he was just going to be as forthright as possible. So that's where I think that has them concerned. But I will say this, guys, this is the caveat I would offer. And I've been in contact with McGahn's personal lawyer all weekend long, and they've been very specific about the fact that he did not go in there with the goal of incriminating President Trump. He just wanted to tell the truth. And I think what we often forget about in an investigation like this is McGahn's testimony would just be one piece of the puzzle, right? So maybe McGahn doesn't think the information that he has is incriminating on its own, but when it's coupled with other things that Robert Mueller may have discovered, that's where the problem could be. And it all goes back to, we say this all the time, Stephen, Justin, we don't know everything Robert Mueller knows,
right?
And this story is another good example of that.
Because he's not tweeting angry, insane, off-the-deep-end comments like the president is again this morning, who seems more angry and more desperate than ever. Rudy Giuliani, meanwhile, is trying to clean up his weekend, where he made our friend Chuck Todd's head explode when he said, truth isn't truth. This is the alternative facts moment when that came out of the White House as well. Rudy is now trying to explain that and said it's just a he said, she said type of comment. I don't know if he intended to say it, but it certainly was an effort to reinforce the 30-35% of people who will never say Trump is wrong, who can go, yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're never really going to know, so let's move on.
Yeah, well, and, you know, here's the thing. As somebody who has to talk on live television and live broadcasts for my entire career and often has to ad-lib, I understand how you can get yourself into a word salad and end up saying something pretty stupid that doesn't make any sense. But there's a track record with this administration of getting into these weird word salads, specifically as it relates to the truth. You know, you, of course, got the alternative facts moment. Jay Sekulow, who's the president's attorney, said at one time that facts evolve over time. And now you've got Rudy Giuliani saying the truth isn't the truth. I mean, when you've already got suspicions about how forthright this group of people is to begin with, and then they confirm those suspicions with these awkward sentences in live television and radio interviews, you start to wonder if perhaps this pattern bears out what we are all suspicious of. So, yeah, and this isn't the first time that Mayor Giuliani stepped in it. He has a specific goal in this whole thing, and that's to destroy the credibility of Robert Mueller. And what's interesting, guys, and I think this is a very important thing to point out, that it was working for a certain period of time. There was no doubt that people were starting to get a little frustrated with Robert Mueller, but the latest polling actually shows his approval kicking back up. I think it's a 6-point jump in a poll that's out this morning. So, you know, this strategy may have worked for a certain period of time, but it looks like it's starting to wane. And if Rudy Giuliani's whole game plan here is to try and make it difficult for members of Congress to vote for or against impeachment, I don't know if that strategy is working long term.
It's a strange place we're in American politics, because you have a administration coming out and trying to sully or discredit an investigation, and then you have essentially, and I think this is what you're seeing, the media defending the investigation the way that they're saying this is a real story and this is something that's happening, but nothing from the investigator himself. I mean, that might be part of what we're looking at as the American people saying, we're not hearing Robert Mueller go to Twitter and say this, that, and the other. He is being respectful of the work that he's doing.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? I actually think it's impressive how strong Mueller's, the opinion the American people have of Mueller has remained despite the fact that he's been silent. I mean, if you're a kid in a schoolyard and a bully keeps punching you in the face and you don't ever punch back, your face is going to be pretty bloody.
Right.
And that's essentially what Donald Trump's tried to do to Robert Mueller, and his face hasn't gotten that bloody. And I think that speaks to the fact that the American people have a certain level of tolerance if they want to see this come to fruition. And I think that even includes people that might be inclined to support President Trump, which we and I have been saying this for more than a year, that if he just allowed this process to go forward, if he really did nothing wrong, if he just allowed this process to go forward. I said this to some of the reporters I was with this weekend when we were covering the president in New Jersey. You know, there's a very good chance that this report comes out and gives the president the type of cover that he is looking for. But if he himself is so discredited, Robert Mueller, through this whole process, how is he then going to be able to hold up this report that perhaps gives him a scapegoat and says, oh, yeah, this guy's good. He knows what he's talking about.
Right, because you know that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, right.
All right, now when we come back, we got to talk about two other stories. The Catholic Church and the response to this horrific story out of Pennsylvania, which literally is indicative of a playbook for running a child sex ring by those who are guilty. And in addition to that, where are we at with these kids who are separated from their parents? More with Ryan Nobles from CNN in just a second. Greg from Arlington Heights, winner of the Blackhawks tickets, Blackhawks single game season tickets, single game tickets for this season, go on sale today. What time, Dave?
10 o'clock at ChicagoBlackhawks.com or through Ticketmaster at 800-745-3000.
I think you'd go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com. That's my chosen place.
That works.
Yeah, okay. Ryan Nobles is back with us. Ryan, the story of the Catholic Church is just so outrageous. A playbook, essentially, for cover-up, where the rules were laid out to not talk about it, to describe it in different terms, to focus on the victims, to make them confused, or in some cases, wildly accusatory. And even if a child is being assaulted or raped, find a way to find something else, including housing for the pastor, the priest, until we can move on. One priest was reassigned to a Disney job related to the church. I mean, it just goes on and on. Kids were given gold crosses that would indicate they were the most vulnerable for the other priests that were involved in this ring. This is just appalling.
As a Catholic myself, every time I've read these details 100 times, hearing spell them out one more time just makes me sick to my stomach. I think there's no question that this is the biggest test of Pope Francis's tenure. He's had somewhat of kind of a romantic ride up until now, where he's kind of been adored by people across the world, but he hasn't really been forced to confront something so difficult that's going to require such dramatic action. And I think a lot of the focus today has got to be on the guy that's the current bishop for the Washington Archdiocese, Cardinal Wuerl, who is perhaps the most prominent American cardinal outside of Timothy Doyle in New York. And Cardinal Wuerl was the bishop in Pittsburgh when this all went down, and he is mentioned in this report numerous times. So far, his response to it has been lackluster at best. I actually am covering that story today and have been in contact with the Archdiocese here, and the Cardinal is convening a meeting of his Council of Priests this morning, where they're going to talk about the response from the congregations here in the greater Washington, D.C. area. But man, this is one of those things, Steve, where I feel like heads have got a role, and parish priests, I think, need to really stand up and say something. The one thing that I was heartened by was I went to Holy Day Mass on Wednesday, and I was at a parish in New Jersey this weekend while I was covering the president, and both parish priests spoke out strongly
and defiantly about this, and did not blame anyone other than the church itself in saying that reforms are necessary. This, I think, is a pivotal moment in the history of the Catholic Church, and the guy that's got to lead this is Pope Francis, and it's got to happen soon.
A letter this morning from the Vatican says, I acknowledge once more the suffering endured by many minors, the abuse of power, the abuse of conscience perpetrated by a significant number of clerics and consecrated persons. Looking back to the past, no effort to beg pardon or seek to repair the harm will be sufficient. Ahead to the future, no effort must be spared to create a culture able to prevent situations like this from being happening again, covered up and perpetuated. That's a good start. It's got to go a step beyond it. And Cardinal Wuerl wanted a cavalcade of bishops to investigate this. You don't invite those who may be complicit to investigate the crime. You just don't.
Yeah, I think that they need some sort of outside. I mean, this has always kind of been a problem with the Catholic Church, is that they're not very open to outside looks into, you know, to get behind the curtain, so to speak. But you're absolutely right. The idea that you're going to have the same people that could be responsible for these crimes investigating them, or those that were responsible for covering up those crimes investigating it, just doesn't make any sense. There needs to be some sort of independent authority that can come in and do a top to bottom assessment of what's going on. Because I think a lot of Catholics felt like we were past this. Not, yep. You're never past something, yep, like this. I don't mean it sounds so clunky, but that we recognize this as a problem and the reforms were happening. So then to have this report was such a punch in the gut, because it was talking about how there were instances as late as 2017 that were taking place. And wow. So clearly more has to be done. And if you wonder if this was happening in Pennsylvania, where else is it happening in the United States and around the world? And that's why the Pope really needs to get a handle on this.
Out of time, but any good news on returning kids to their parents 3 weeks down the road after the judge's absolutely drop-dead deadline?
It doesn't seem like it. I mean, there are, you know, a smattering of reports here and there, but this is still pretty much chaos on the border, and there are a lot of parents waiting to be reunited with their kids, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of help to get to kind of solve the bureaucracy problems that are making it impossible to take place.
I look forward to your reporting on the Catholic Church story today. Good luck to all of us, and God bless those kids, man. It's just such a horrible story. Thank you, Ryan Noble.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great week.
Ryan Noble, CNN, back with Dean in a moment. News first on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood.
So yesterday, Dane, a friend of mine, friend of the show, Dr. Sam, the veterinarian, he was leaving the neighborhood with his lovely wife, who is 1,000% Italian. They were headed for Italian Fest.
Oh.
And my concern in going to Italian Fest is somebody obviously every year must get their eyes poked out by people talking with their hands, right? I mean, there has to be.
It can be very dangerous. I always wear goggles when
right,
I go there.
Right, right. But a beautiful weekend for all your favorite outdoor activities. What did you do outdoors this weekend, Dean?
I didn't do anything outdoors.
All your stuff was indoors.
Everything was indoors.
Mm, boy.
And when I did go outdoors, just for a moment, I wore a beekeeper suit, so I wouldn't get it.
Ah, he wouldn't want any sun.
I didn't want any sun or elements on me at all.
I understand. When you think hot dogs, Dean, do you think Chicago?
Sure.
Nope, you think Waterville, Maine.
No, I don't.
Waterville, Maine is what you think, mister.
No. Okay.
A hot dog hotspot in Waterville, Maine stopped making crinkle-cut fries. Bali's famous Franks started making only straight-cut fries. The blades are extremely expensive, said the owner of the place. We spent about $2,000 last year on blades. They are now looking into a criminal investigation because somebody threatened to kill the owner because he stopped making crinkle-cut fries.
There you go. Yeah, that's serious.
Yeah, well, as the food maven that you are, is there anything in town if they changed it, you'd be violent?
Well, You know, I've talked many times about my favorite hot dog place, Gene and Jude's, mm-hmm. in River Grove. Currently, they serve the hot dog, you know, typical Chicago hot dog, but they put the fries, fresh cut, and I believe straight cut, if I'm remembering correctly. It is straight cut, now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. They put the fries right on the hot dog and then wrap everything up so it gets, everything gets steamy, greasy, it's delicious. If they started serving the fries separately, I might get violent.
Okay. All right. This is actually a good mini text question.
Yeah.
For the balance of the show, is there a Chicago iconic food thing where if they changed it, you would become violent?
I thought the text question would be, what else would make Dean violent?
Oh, no, that's a longer text question. We couldn't do that in mini form.
If I went to Italian Fest and they didn't have rice balls, I'd get violent.
I've said this a million times. If you have that condition, get to a clinic as fast as you possibly can.
I was talking about that yesterday, the Italian Fest, mm-hmm. and my favorite thing there is the rice balls, arancini, mm-hmm. which is delicious. I've had so many comments on that yesterday. It's always fascinating to me what topic resonates
with people.
And, you know, you could talk about serious things and collusion and, you know, all kinds of important things going on in the world. Rice balls seem to do the trick.
Yeah, yesterday. You never know. Well, it's like, you know, you get to an end of a show and you think a show is, and people go, oh, the show was great today. Right. And then you get to an end of a show and you go, oh, I killed it today. Crickets, nothing.
Nobody says it.
Nobody understands. We don't understand the audience. When we come back, Kevin Spacey, is his career over? Also in the news, MTV Movie Awards, Sharknado 6, when are the Aretha services going to be, and old rice balls. We'll have details on anything else coming
That's
up
my new
well.
Nickname, by the way.
Rice balls. We'll be calling his name, Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 7. All right, back with Dean. He's on Channel 9, very famous television station on a Big Shot morning show here.
Home of Bozo the Circus.
Yes, right, exactly, amongst other things, but certainly Bozo, you know, is one of your big draws. Right?
Very true, very
yeah.
true.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve, I just got this email in, heard you talking about rice balls.
Mm-hmm.
Try Sicilian Bakery on Cumberland in Norwich if you're ever in the neighborhood, or Romano's in Franklin Park.
Both prime places for rice balls.
Annabella Val says Freddy's in Cicero?
Yeah.
Cicero.
Mm-hmm. Can you get Annabella Val on her accent just to say rice balls?
I know balls.
There you go. That's all I needed. That's all I needed. Pretty much made my day right there.
We're all so mature.
Yeah, we really are. All right, MTV Video Music Awards. Who's going to win?
Well, Cardi B's got the most nominations. She's got 10 nominations tonight. Beyonce and Jay-Z, popular husband and wife duo. Maybe you've heard of them.
Worth $1 billion.
They have 8 nominations, and Childish Gambino has 7 nominations. So we'll see how that shakes out. Doesn't necessarily mean that Cardi B's going to walk away with all the awards, but she does have the most nominations tonight.
I have made Justin vice president of hip hop on the show.
Thank you. Assistant fight.
You're going to make him watch the show tonight?
Well, he will. I mean, all the kids do.
I got 11.
Is there anyone more talented than Childish Gambino right now?
No. He is.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he's pretty.
You're both voting yes on this?
I'm voting very much yes.
Okay.
Do we know? The problem I have with the Video Music Awards, VMAs, is they do everything for shock value. Everything on that show is watch. Remember, that's where Britney Spears kissed Madonna.
Sure.
And
I mean, well, you have to have a big opening. They always want a big opening, right. And now they want it viral.
What was it like? I think it was last year or the year before, Kanye got up there and did 20 minutes on running for president. I mean, does it get old after a while, or do we just have to expect this from the VMAs?
I think it's already old, isn't it, Dean?
I think it's natural. I think it's just part of what that show is. These are musicians. They're creative types, and they do unpredictable things.
Let me translate for what Dean just said. They're crazy. They're all crazy. Do you remember the year of the VMAs? They opened with a guy killing a guy. Remember that?
I missed that one. That's
one year they really wanted a headline.
And there isn't anybody hosting this year either.
Is that right?
No, there's no host, it says. Yeah, I was reading the People, and they were talking about it. Just, you know, people getting...
You sure? I heard Lourdes Duarte had a shot at that.
Oh, maybe. Or Anna Benaval.
Yeah. Dean, what do you know?
They are not going to have a host, and I don't think really they need one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because they just jump in. They just jump in.
I think most shows don't really need one. You know, they'll,
whoa. Easy on the you don't need a host for shows thing. Come on.
at award shows.
Oh, okay, good.
At big-time award shows. How much do they add to the show?
Not a lot.
They add 3 or 4 minutes of usually a boring monologue at the top of the show. They feel obligated to try to do comedy during the show, which never works. Just get from element to element. That's all that you need.
Yeah, but Ryan Seacrest isn't doing anything tonight. You know, I mean, you got to keep the guy busy.
This year, Britney Spears and Madonna are going to kiss, but Madonna's going to take out her false teeth first before it happens.
What?
Madonna's got a great recipe for rice balls, in case you wondered.
She's Italian.
Aretha.
The services have been announced. It's going to be next week. There will be a public viewing at an African American History Museum in Detroit on the 28th and 29th, which seems like a long time between the death and the viewing. And then the funeral itself will be on the 31st, private. It's going to be just for family and friends.
You know, back in the 80s, before Seinfeld became Seinfeld, and I did stand-up with him a few times, I remember the first time I met him going back into the tiny comedy office and seeing stacks of cash on a desk as he was getting paid. And the reason was he didn't trust comedy club owners. Over the weekend, I saw a story about Aretha with all the great Aretha stories coming out.
Right.
She always insisted on being paid in cash because of how many times black entertainers were ripped off.
Yep. Same with Ray Charles. Same thing, famous stories about that he would never go on until.
Can you imagine having to stack that kind of cash up when Aretha was Aretha?
Not just get paid, but they want to get paid before they step onto the
stage. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of duffel bags.
It's my theory of, you know, that famous, now iconic clip of her singing to Carole King at the Kennedy Center.
Right.
Where she comes on stage with her fur coat and her purse. My theory that she didn't want to leave anything backstage.
It's a rough neighborhood.
I'm sort of not kidding.
I know you're not kidding. You learn to protect yourself.
I am convinced that that's why she brought all that stuff on stage with her.
Weird twist in the Me Too stuff, even though technically this isn't related, it's one of the key figures.
Well, one of the key figures in this was Asia Argento. She was one of the first to come out with allegations against Harvey Weinstein. The New York Times has obtained documents that Asia Argento herself paid a former child actor $380,000 to keep his sexual assault claim against her quiet. Said that he was 17 years old when it happened. She was 37 at the time. He claims that he was assaulted by her. She wanted to keep it quiet, especially after all of the allegations that she made against Harvey Weinstein had come out. Probably most recently, she's best known as she was the girlfriend of the late Anthony Bourdain.
And Anthony Bourdain's final season of shows will be run by CNN. They started running promos this weekend.
Is that creepy to watch
a little
that
bit?
Now?
A little bit.
It is for me.
Sharknado 6.
Oh, did you guys stop what you were doing last night to watch it?
Was it last night?
Yep.
Darn it.
Don't pretend like you didn't waste 2 hours of your life like I did.
No, I am actually planning on binge watching all of them with a Sharknado party at my house.
That's probably not a bad idea, because I'm thinking that may be the reason why I thought Sharknado 6, which was the final one last night, may have been the worst piece of crap I've ever seen in my life. And I've seen some pieces of crap in my life. I've seen some pretty awful
The idea
things.
That there would be better Sharknados is amazing to me.
Well, you know, they're campy and they're over the top. And usually they're, you know, they're like enough over the top that they are entertaining. They're so bad that they're good. Last night's was just plain awful. On every single level, it was just plain awful.
Where'd this one take place?
This one took place as they were time traveling, Steve.
Oh, of course.
They went back to medieval times, and I don't mean the restaurant / entertainment complex.
Right.
They went back to the Old West. They went back to the Revolutionary War, where Benjamin Franklin was played by Leslie Jordan from Will and Grace.
And was Benjamin Franklin eaten by a flying shark?
Yeah, well, yes, he was. He was eaten by a flying shark, as was Dee Snider, who was playing a sheriff in the Old West. He was Dee Snider was a sheriff in the Old West hunting down Billy the Kid.
Was Rudy Giuliani in any of these movies?
He was not, but, you know, actually, I think it was Sharknado 3 or 4. Donald Trump, seriously, was trying to get on Sharknado.
Oh, yeah, and he was really mad that they were going to put him in because they put somebody else in.
Mark Cuban, wasn't it?
It was Cuban, that's
Mark Cuban got in instead.
Cuban was made the president, right? And Trump wanted to be the president.
Yeah, so, you know, the idea that Rudy Giuliani might be in something like this is not,
it's not
out of turn.
Right. Awful
B-roll, B-actors in this movie, but not even so bad that it was good. I mean, it went beyond that. I sat there for 2 hours, like, I...
Hating your choices in life?
Kill myself. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
It makes me want to watch it even more.
Sorry, spoiler alert. I should have said spoiler alert.
And we're out of time, but I don't care because we have to talk about this. Even though it was not a nationwide release, how much money did Kevin Spacey's movie make this weekend?
It was only open in, as they say, limited release. It was only open in 6 theaters. The Kevin Spacey movie took in a grand total of $425. $6 per theater.
That's not a lot.
Why, Dean, why even release it at 6 theaters? I'm not sure what the reasoning is if you know you're not going to make money off of that.
You're just setting yourself up to have yourself kicked in the cojones.
Yeah, I don't
got
understand.
People to talk about it this morning, like me.
Yeah, maybe.
To say that it only earned no money, so maybe there's a slight curiosity factor now that
maybe
people just
will wanna people. Here's a question: when it goes to video, and it will in an hour.
It's on video. It was on video on demand.
Us.
Yeah, it was on video on demand before they released it.
Will people sneak watch it and say they didn't?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I can't do it. There's no way I can see Kevin Spacey do anything now and picture him as an actor.
Yeah, even try to watch some of his Academy Award winning roles, which are, you know, brilliant movies, brilliant portrayals. I can't watch the guy now.
It's like watching Cosby do stand-up. You can't do it.
Yeah. I was watching the one of the many things I did indoors while it was so nice outside over the weekend. I watched, I'm really loving that CNN History of Comedy, by the way.
Yeah, they do a great job.
It's so well done.
Yep.
But they were doing a section yesterday, and I thought of you on a clean comedian.
Yep, thanks.
One of the people that they featured on there was Bill Cosby, and it was more than ironic. I mean, his comedy act was, I guess, what you would call clean comedy without swearing.
Without a doubt.
Sexual content. But how do you watch Bill Cosby now?
You can't.
Especially in a context of no sexual content. I understand what they were saying. It wasn't in his material, but it's hard to watch him. Same thing with Kevin Spacey, I think, too.
Top 3 greatest stand-ups of all time, and I can never see him again. It's amazing. I mean, old stuff. Obviously, he's not performing right now. Thank you, Dean.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff.
Good luck there, Rice Balls.
Thank you, Honey Cakes.
See you later. 8:35, headlines in a moment. Steve Stone on a White Sox call-up you ought to be excited about. All that coming up, 720 WGN.
I believe I am psychic.
The Heat tonight, and a guy on the mound that does not have a big fastball. I think that 13 home runs away is probably going to go by the boards this evening.
My first prediction, I am either going to fly or ruin that family's picnic.
Hey, you ruined our picnic!
Psychic!
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
And our friend Steve Stone, sponsored by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Where are you eating today?
Well, it would be Beatrix, except I'm not in town. We're in Minneapolis waiting to take on the vaunted Twins. So this should be an interesting makeup game.
Well, I thought there was a Let Us Entertain You establishment in Minnie, no?
Well, there is.
We'll go over there,
then. It's Twin City Grill, but that's at the Mall of Americas. That's quite some time from here, yes. Quite a while from here. Plus, you can only have so much walleye.
Yeah, well, there is that. All right, so we're going to talk about Michael Kopech, but before we do that, take me back. I think I know the story. Steve Stone comes up to the big leagues. Where and when and what happened?
I came up to the major leagues with the San Francisco Giants and was fortunate to be able to secure the third starting spot behind two Hall of Famers, Juan Marichal and Gaylord Perry, and I was a non-roster player in 1971. We had four Hall of Famers on that San Francisco Giant team, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Marichal and Perry, and we had a member of the 30-30 club five different times. Bobby Bonds was playing right field, so it was quite a Giants team. And I got a chance to start in San Diego, my first start. The first two hitters were a base hit and a home run, so I had an infinite ERA after two hitters. I figured it might get better after that, and it seemed to get a little better, so that was good.
Who was managing?
A man by the name of Charlie Fox, who later on actually managed the Chicago Cubs fairly briefly. He was my manager with San Francisco, and it was a wonderful first year, only because we wound up going to the playoffs, running into the Pittsburgh Pirates, losing to them, watching them go to the World Series in 71. But getting a chance to play with those guys was quite a thrill.
What was Willie Mays like?
He was an interesting fellow. Wasn't as nice a guy as Willie McCovey, but he was a wonderful player, quite obviously. I still believe at the age of 39, he was the best center fielder in all of baseball during that year. And wound up helping lead that team, hit a home run on the final day of the season to get the Giants into postseason play. Just a wonderfully talented man. Seemed like every one of his talents was pretty much built for the game of baseball.
Sure.
And you know, being a teammate of mine, watching him run down my mistakes and watching his ability, you knew he was something special at that point. It wasn't just a major league player. It was a major league star and one of the greatest who ever played the game. So it was interesting to watch him.
And I want to get to Kopech, but last question on you, mister. Gaylord Perry ever look at you and go, kid, you got to spit more?
Well, he offered to teach me his pitch, actually, but wanted to charge me $3,000. And I told him at the time that it was... I said, you're pretty much talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 45% of my salary, my take-home pay. I didn't think that was a pretty good idea at the time, that's but he tremendous. Said, you're thinking about it in the short run, yeah. He said, think about it in the long run. It'll be really wonderful for you. And I said, yeah, but in the meantime, I'll be living in a tent. So
that's cool.
He never taught me his pitch, and that was it.
Steve, there's so much anticipation for what we're going to see tomorrow from Michael Kopech. Mm-hmm. If you had one piece of advice for the young man before he takes the mound tomorrow night at Guaranteed Rate Field against, as you said, the vaunted Twins, what would it be?
Well, it would be something that he's no control over, and so unfortunately then he can't probably adhere to it, but it would be try to find some way to manage the adrenaline rush that he's going to get, because he's a man that that throws awfully hard, as you guys know. We've been talking about it for quite some time. He's timed it upwards of 102, maybe even knocking at the door of 103 miles an hour on his fastball. But he's going to have to be battling that adrenaline surge he's going to get in his first major league start. And the only thing that I worry about is control. I don't worry about anything else. His stuff is terrific, and I think he's shown over the last four or five starts he can get the secondary stuff over the plate. So, yeah, it's with a great deal of anticipation we're looking forward to this start. And the only thing that I do worry about is that that adrenaline he's undoubtedly going to feel, and his desire then to throw the ball through the catcher as opposed to the catcher, because the occupation is called pitching, and that's what hopefully he will do. He will pitch, because the arm is good enough to win a lot of games in the major league.
He's a tremendous talent, and just in the last 8 or 9 starts, he seems to have figured out his control. But for a pitcher like Michael Kopech, who has great stuff and great secondary stuff, he does. He's a strikeout pitcher, meaning there are going to be more pitch counts. There's going to be deeper counts. What does he need to know about pitching in the major leagues when he's trying to punch guys out almost on called strikes?
Well, it's very difficult to get hitters to miss pitches in the strike zone. That's something that he's going to figure out. That's not really the case in the minor leagues. In the minor leagues, you're facing a lineup of 9 hitters. You're going to face 2 that are really good hitters, and maybe that 3rd who can hit a little bit. In the major leagues, you're going to face probably 4 or 5 guys who can hit really well in that lineup, and maybe a couple of other guys who will on occasion do you some damage. But it's completely different, and that's one of the things that he has to bear in mind. But also, the whole object of what he's doing is not to strike out hitters. If it was to strike out hitters, then whoever struck out the most would win. That's not the case, as we know. So he's got to worry about throwing strikes. That's number one. Getting the first pitch over the plate, that would set up each and every at-bat. And the strikeouts are going to come because the stuff is that good. He just has to try if he can, and this is going to be difficult. You want to limit the pitch count because you don't want to get to 100 pitches before you're through the fifth inning. And big strikeout pitchers have a tendency to get to that point, especially if they're throwing a lot of balls to go with it. So, look, we're not going to judge him on these first couple of starts. We're going to take a look at the stuff. We're going to marvel at it. We're going to be very happy that he's in a White Sox uniform, and hopefully he'll be able to do what he was able to do in the minor leagues, that's harness the control, get the ball consistently over the plate, because when he does, he's something to contend with.
Dave, last word.
Steve, what message might this send to other top prospects in the White Sox organization? And I'm not speaking specifically of Eloy Jimenez, but you know he's paying close attention. But other guys, just the idea that maybe, you know, you produce, you continue to make progress, you're going to get a spot on the major league roster.
Well, take a look at the history of the White Sox, and you'll see an organization that is not shy about bringing up their young talent. That's one of the things that if you do any research, and I'm sure these guys that are contemplating signing a professional contract, if in their consideration the Chicago White Sox are one of those teams, then you have to take a look at the history and realize that they do bring up their young talent to the major leagues. They are not shy about bringing them up. If you're good enough in the White Sox organization, you're going to get your opportunity. You're not going to be blocked by anybody over the long term, because that hasn't been the history of this team. This team has brought up their guys when they're ready to be brought up. Kopech is a great example of that. And we're going to see Aloy coming up in the not-too-distant future. I don't know if it's going to be this year or when it's going to be, but when he comes up, he's going to be here to stay. And, you know, those aren't the only two young players that the Sox have that are knocking at the door to come here. There's a lot of other guys that are going to get their opportunity, if not this year, certainly next. But the one thing that you have to understand about the Sox organization, it's been this way for some time, is you will get your shot to play in the major leagues, unlike some other organizations that either block you, eventually trade you, or lost to a Rule 5 pick. But the White Sox, if you're good enough, you will get here, at least given the opportunity. After that, you're on your own. You make it or break it on your own merits, but you will get the chance. And that, again, has been the history of this organization.
It's Steve Stone. He's hungry. He's in Minneapolis, and he needs you to bring him food. And when he's in town, of course, he's eating at Let Us Entertain You restaurants. Give me a recommendation. I'm in Chicago.
Recommendation? Well, you can certainly. I'll tell you, one of the things that I truly love to do, I love to go to Hub 51 sure. for lunch.
Sure.
Very good.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in and ask for the
really
Steve Stone. If I ask for the Steve Stone, what do I get?
You get a slap on the head and tell you to come back at dinner.
Well, how's that different than any other place I go? Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. And thank you to Let Us Entertain Your Restaurants, more obviously on Kopech before tomorrow night and after as well, here on your White Sox radio station. All right, we have White Sox tickets to give away after Mr. Stone was on. And normally we have that subtle introduction to Super Joe's Monday feature here. But Super Joe, we don't have time for the intro. I apologize. But of course we have time for the question. So what is the question?
Everybody's talking about Michael Kopech, and he will reportedly wear jersey number 34. Since 2000, four other White Sox pitchers have worn jersey number 34.
Walter Payton.
Close. Name two of the four that have done that.
Two of the four, 34 since the year 2000.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Mr. Tricky. First correct caller at 312-981-7200. Get Sox tickets. News next.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
303 East Wacker, to put it in more geographically exact terms. What a beautiful day. Well, it's not going to be so beautiful later, though, huh? Dave, did you have afternoon plans that are screwed up now?
I was going to go for a run on the lake.
I don't like your chances.
No?
No.
I don't like to run in the rain.
Rain and a thunderstorm a little bit later on. Justin Kaufman's here. Justin is a 16-inch softball player.
Today's a bye week, but I was going to go and watch the other games just because that's the kind
of addictive thing you got going on there?
It's kind of softball.
What player, you're a first baseman?
I could play, as I proved last week, I can shift. I played third.
You did?
The first time in a while. Oh, my gosh. Everything came my way. Boom.
What's the difference defensively in 16-inch softball between 16-inch softball and, goalie?
There's a lot. I mean, it's not a guarantee. The game, if you hit a pop-up on the infield, is not a guarantee that's
No, because it's a spinning watermelon. Right.
That's the fun of it. You have to be adept at defense when it comes to a spinning waterfall.
I'm going
to
teach you about golf. All right. And you'll have another lesson coming up in just a second.
All right, good.
I even went to a softball game yesterday.
You did?
Yeah. Where was your softball game? Hold on.
My son plays.
Oh, he plays in a rec league or what? He
plays in a men's fall league now.
Okay, look at you.
Yeah.
What a good mom.
I love it.
It's fun.
How old's your son now?
22.
And you still go to his games. Look at you.
Just when it was fun.
Do you yell at the umpire?
I almost did.
Did you go to the coach and say, how come my kid's not playing more?
Well, because he's injured. He's got a knee brace on.
Oh, okay.
He catches.
Adorable.
And he gets a runner at first. When he gets it to first, it's pretty funny.
And you cheer and scream.
I do.
I like it. Hey, Bob, you allegedly have the correct answer to Super Joe's question. Super Joe, give us the White Sox question again.
Michael Kopech is coming up tomorrow. He's going to wear jersey number 34. Name two of the last four players to wear number 34.
And you can ask Justin for help if you need it, or Dave, but Dave technically is a professional, can't give you any. But, you know.
I got him, though, I think.
All right, so what's the answer there, Bobby?
Matt Albers, big Matt Albers.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Swarzak. Mm-hmm.
Ding, ding, ding.
Gavin Floyd, I believe, is one of the others.
What a great name.
Gavin Floyd.
Garcia, maybe, too. I don't know.
Yep, Sweaty Freddy.
Freddy Garcia was also a 34. Wow, how about that? Well, look, dude, you win. Congratulations. We have four tickets for the Sox and the Red Sox.
Ooh, big one.
It's going to be great. You know, the Red Sox have won 211 games this year so far. They could well be headed for the World Series. So you can see them on Thursday, August 30th at 7:10. Thanks for listening, Bob.
Chris Sale with that team now.
All right, easy. Take a breath. There, Bob, you're a big winner. Hold on. Yeah, Chris Sale, is he rotation-wise?
He's on the DL.
Chancey,
he's back.
He's back. Back. He came back last week.
So he'll pitch
he's
next
been
week?
On the DL.
He should pitch in that Red Sox-White Sox series.
He might.
I'll have to look at their rotation.
I believe it might even be a four-game series, too.
So. Well, there you go.
It's a Thursday night game that we're talking about.
It's a decent chance. All right, let's talk golf here. In studio, Mike Jacobs, CEO of Swing King. And Mike, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you. Where are you based?
We are based here in Chicago in the Fulton Market area.
All right. So explain to people what the business is.
So we are an automated contest platform for golf courses. We install a technology solution, so three HD cameras.
Okay.
Lets us capture video 24/7 of the hole. Typically, we pick a par three. And what that does is we allow golfers to enter a contest for a fee. And if they hit a hole in one, they get fabulous cash prizes, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000.
Now, see, I am old enough to, and I'm sure you're not, to remember when a hole in one, Dave, I know you are, in a charity golf tournament meant a new car, mm-hmm. not a car for a year. Not a room full of furniture, not a weekend in Vegas. So I love this concept because this concept brings a little extra level of competition in.
It does.
Is it legal or are you running some kind of illegal gaming operation?
Well, I'm happy to tell you it is legal.
Okay.
It's a game of skill.
Okay.
So it is legal in all 50 states.
Okay.
But yeah, it's fun. I mean, what's better than a hole-in-one? I mean, I've never had a hole-in-one.
I've had one.
So congratulations. So tell me about it. What was it like?
7-iron, 168 yards. Not that I remember every bit of it. Two bounces left to right, went in the cup and went and looked at it. Took a selfie of me standing next to the hole like a 9-year-old.
And
it was good.
And how much would you pay for a video of that hole-in-one?
A lot.
A lot.
A lot.
So that's the other element of our contest. In addition to the big cash prize, you also get an HD video of that memorable shot.
Oh, that's very cool.
So it becomes an HD video, a video trophy that you can share with every single person you know on social media.
How many narcissist golfers have bought videos of them getting it within 3 feet of the cup?
Nobody yet.
Come on.
Yeah, we're working on that.
You should have it like, you know, the Disney rides where you get off the Disney ride and they run you through the gift shop and you go, I'm going to buy the $30 photo anyway. I like you switching that up.
Yeah, well, we're working on it. I'll take that idea.
All right, so give me an example of a course you guys are in.
So we're on over 50 courses in Chicagoland.
Wow.
So we're in Wilmette, we're in Cog Hill, we're in Silver Lake.
Very cool.
You know, Big Run, up and down Chicago.
And those are different greens fees depending on the golf course. Does the fee change? Your fee, I'm talking about.
The fee is the same at every course. And what's interesting is you know, a lot of people think that, well, this will only work at higher-end golf courses where people are paying, you know, bigger greens fees. But we have courses that have $12 greens fees on nine holes, and we have courses that have $200 greens fees. So it works across all spectrum of golfers.
Do you see with the sport of golf and specifically what happens at local golf courses, technology playing a bigger role in how people enjoy the game?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, technology is obviously a bigger part of our lives every day. I mean, everybody uses interactive GPS and all the yardage. So what we're doing is providing that video, that fun, that entertainment, and adding a little bit of that Topgolf element to the golf course.
Now, Topgolf is a name that a lot of people know, even if they're not necessarily golfers, because it's become such a huge deal. And by the way, I've told this story before, Dave, but I was given an opportunity to invest in Topgolf, and I went, let me think about it.
Good call.
Let me see if that works out.
Good call.
Good call by me. But one of the things I like about what you're doing here is there's a lot of talk, certainly prior to Tiger coming back, about the trouble with golf, because kids, millennials in particular, didn't want to play it. It wasn't fast enough. There wasn't somebody cool like Tiger that you could latch onto as a kid that you wanted to play. This can, you know, re-inject a little excitement into the game and help save the game, frankly.
It actually
does. For the masses.
I mean, golf is a big sport. There's 24 million active golfers in the U.S., so that's people who've played around a golf in the last year. And millennials are now the largest single demo of all those golfers. So more than a quarter are millennials. So it is a popular game with millennials. It is coming back, but golf has to change. It has to evolve. You have to add some fun. You have to add some excitement.
And there was some talk about 16-inch holes. You know, as a matter of fact, there's courses in Indiana where they're doing that. They make the hole larger, so the game is not quite as challenging, and allegedly it moves along more quickly.
Oh, I remember we went and played foot golf.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that was great for me.
Well, so we actually are going to install a foot golf course. We're going to install a foot golf course, a disc golf course. So we're going to take this to a bunch of other formats.
All right. So for information on what you're doing, if you're a golf course in particular listening, how do they get a hold of you?
Swingking.com is the best way. Okay. But like I said, we partner with golf courses. There's no upfront fee, and it's great for golfers.
Now, what's it cost me when I play?
The typical entry is $5 to win a $10,000 hole-in-one prize, or $10 to win a $20,000 hole-in-one
prize. Why wouldn't you do that?
It's a no-brainer. And you get the video if you have that winning shot.
And depending on the golf course, you might spend $10,000 in drinks anyway. There's a tradition, Justin. If you get a hole in one, you have to buy drinks for everybody in the clubhouse at that time.
Well, and you picked a day when there was nobody in the clubhouse, right?
Well, let's just say there were extenuating circumstances, yes. Well, I like what you're doing. Again, what's the website?
Swingking.com.
All right, cool. Anything else the public needs to know about this?
That's it. Just come out and play. We want to see you on the golf course.
And when you get an opportunity, jump in. Well, right? That's great. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for what you're doing. 920 back with... well, we have several things to get to, but we want to play back for you a guest from earlier this morning who is the woman. Yeah, I mean, you've probably seen her by now. This is the woman that threw out the first pitch. She happens to be a nun. They're at the first pitch of the White Sox game. She's fantastic. We'll play that piece of the show from earlier back next.
She was talking to somebody, and she wanted to warm up. So she had a mitt and a ball, and so she gave him the mitt. She stepped back at about 45 feet and threw a bullet. I was like, wait a minute. And he threw it back to her, and she fielded it barehanded. And I was like, okay, she looks like she can play a little bit. So we started talking to her, and she says, yeah, she said she played center and short. And I said, can you play for us? And she said, sure.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Can you imagine if you have Kopech tomorrow night and they roll out Sister Mary Jo Sobieck at second or short? If you saw her on the news or online, she went viral right after this game was complete, and she was on the show earlier. You can get the podcast of this show and hear the full interview with Sister Mary Jo at WGNradio.com, at Cochran Show on Twitter, basically wherever you pick up your podcast. Now, Sister Mary Jo Sobieck, when I asked her this morning, why'd you wear number 60?
Well, I wore number 60. It's the 60th anniversary of our school here in Chicago Heights, Marian Catholic. Our Dominican sisters from Springfield in Illinois, we founded the school in 1958. And so it's our 60th year. And so they picked me to represent the sisters still being here after those 60 years. And I was happy to have that opportunity and to hopefully do them proud.
My favorite part was when you bounced the baseball off your muscle in your arm, your bicep.
Thanks. It just came natural to me. Having played shortstop and center field, I'm used to throwing off, you know, a hop or getting a catch. So I thought to make it the most natural, I had to put myself in motion. So I did a little something that was just going to make it relaxed.
When was the last time you played?
Organized softball? It's been a while. I mean, I've gone home on my home visits in the summer, and I've done some rec leagues, but that's probably been 10 years ago. But I throw the ball around a lot. You know, I golf, I shoot hoops, I try to stay in shape, so I keep myself agile.
Are there any other nuns that, you know, have any game that you can play catch with?
No, I'll be honest with you. I'll be selfish here and make a plug for vocations here. Our life is not just a love of sports, but it's a love of God and, sure. and keeping your energy and your motivation and enthusiasm for life. And no, I'm the youngest in our community here by about 10 years.
Is it surprising to you that just the idea of throwing out the first pitch has grabbed America's attention, the world's attention?
Absolutely. I had no idea. I don't even know how that happens. One of the students said to me, "Sister, this is going to go viral." I said, "What does that even mean? How does that happen?" So, no, I had no idea. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even going to stay for the whole game. But there was a lot of excitement and energy, and it was just a fun night. It was a really good night.
So, do you have any tips for Michael Kopech, who's coming up tomorrow for the White Sox?
I would say, you know, you just have to be yourself, do your best, and let God do the rest. Right?
That's a great advice for everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And just, you got to do you. You know, you got recruited for a reason, so don't change your mechanics now. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Do you know what the White Sox Lucas Giolito said about you?
No.
This is the guy that caught your pitch, obviously. First off,
right,
he said,
right,
ow.
I do know that.
You started out with ow.
Ow.
But after the game said she had the whole routine. She had it planned out. I was just lucky to be back there. She threw a perfect pitch. You literally have made it to the big leagues because you got another big leaguer using cliches to talk about your skills.
That's great.
How good a golfer are you?
You know, I can hit the long ball. My short game is a little, you know, a little rusty, but I can hit the long ball.
There's a lot of prayer that goes on the golf course.
I keep it on the short grass, as they say, right, fellas?
Keep it on the short grass. God, please let me make this putt. Yeah. Please, please.
That's right.
Sister Mary Jo, it's an honor to speak with you, and I love your attitude, and we need it on a Monday morning more than ever. Thanks for being the most valuable person on the planet.
It.
Right there.
God bless you. Thanks a lot.
That's a fun nun. I mean, that's a fun nun right there, right?
She put that on a business card. I'm the fun nun.
What could we do, like, by way of reality TV and a sports challenge thing with Sister Jean and Sister Mary Jo, huh?
See, I'm going to think about that. I'm sure someone already is.
Commentary as they take other members of the cloth through their various sporting activities.
Or we could form our station softball team and she could be our star player.
Yeah, she could. She did.
I like player manager.
Yeah.
She's inspirational. You two fighting over lineups. Justin, calm down. It's a nun.
Could you do a version of Superstars?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm kind of going down that road.
With the clergy? Right?
It would work.
Superstars of the clergy.
Let's get to Hollywood. Let's
pitch
this, right?
A lot of the clergy, though, are old white guys, so we may run into some broken hips. But, you know. She's tanned, rested, and ready. She's great.
Yeah.
See her.
Looking for a positive story, right?
Amen to that. See her online and hear the podcast completely wherever you get Steve Cochran podcast. Hi to everybody on CLTV. Let's come back with the headlines.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
That's a love song from winter. Your Blackhawks are almost back. What are we, 8 weeks away, did you say?
We're less than that. The first home game of the regular season is October 7th, so just about 7 weeks.
And it's a Sunday now.
And of course,
this year, I should say.
Sunday night against Toronto. And, of course, preseason is just a few weeks away.
Wow.
We always do up the opener, and this year, Ro and I, and you said you do a drive-by.
If I'm invited, I wasn't normally invited. Okay, then I will.
Ro and I will do a pre-pregame, prior to the pregame.
And,
A pre-pre. And that'll be fun. But it's kind of cool having a Sunday night opener.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. So. But they're going to play two games before the home opener, so which normally there's been like one.
Uh-huh.
So.
And Tony Esposito is standing by, greatest goaltender of all time and a handsome fellow as well. Tony, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you guys?
We are doing fine, and, you know, I didn't get a chance to express this to you personally, but condolences on Stan.
Yes, it was tough, but the whole ceremony was very beautiful, and it was a tough day, but overall, we made it through, and
sure.
He's in a better situation right now.
No question about it. And our best to his family. What made him so special as a player? If you chose one Stan Mikita thing or skill that immediately jumps to mind, what would it be?
Stan was always constant, steady. He just...
could depend on him.
He wasn't the kind of guy that was, you know, he'd come in the locker room and scream at you or anything. He was very, you know, even-keeled and a team player all the way.
And a guy who was dependable night after night after night. He was never going to come to work and half-ass it, was he?
Well, no. He was, when he retired, he was like 41, and he retired because he just didn't want to put up with... The some of the stuff that was going on, and I tried to talk him out of it because I knew he could still play, but he just retired and
he was done.
He was, you know, over 20 years with the same team. Have you heard of anybody else like that?
No, and not anymore. I mean, come on. You know, there's a great story that Bob Verdi wrote amongst many, you know, four or five editions on Stan, who was a friend. And Verdi, the best there is, Verdi wrote a story about when McDonough asked you guys to come in as ambassadors. And I have the story right, I think it's Stan's wife got the call. And they had the meeting over the phone. He said, well, I'll give you time to think about it, talk to your family. And Stan hung up the phone and said to his wife, think about it. Think about it. I've been waiting 20 years for this phone call.
That's right.
It's nice to hear how much it means to have you guys, or means to you guys, to have you back with the organization, you know, on behalf of Rocky and McDonough and Blunk and all those guys who make those decisions.
Well, what's nice about it is, you know, there comes a time when you can't play anymore, and you like to contribute, and you know, we're diehard Blackhawk guys, as you know.
Sure.
And we just wanted to be part of it, and it was perfect the way Rocky came in. And what he did with me, for example, was I was supposed to come in and sit down with him and John McDonough, and it got the weather was bad, and I couldn't land in Chicago, so the flight was canceled, and then I said, I'll come tomorrow. And they said, okay, that's fine. And then I got a call in the afternoon. They just said, if you want the job, it's yours. You don't have to come.
Well, not even for an interview. There you go.
Tony, I'm wondering if you had a chance at the Blackhawks convention to chat with Corey Crawford at all. Do you have a sense for where he is with training camp just around the corner?
Well, I did talk to him, and he seems to be coming along. I don't really know what his issues are, but he just he seems like he's not quite ready. He didn't seem like it. I don't know what it is.
I'm hearing closer than ever. Aren't you hearing closer than ever, though?
I think that he has to go on the ice, and once he gets a taste of it, he'll be back.
Right.
But the good thing about it is, we got two NHL goalies now.
Yep.
And that's a big plus. Because I'm not being smart, but we had two kids in the net last year that let in a lot of bad goals.
Yeah, they just weren't ready.
That's right. And, you know, they're put in the fire and said, okay, now lead the team. But now we got two goalies that can both play and both play well. So I think we're in a much better situation that way.
Tony, for this team, it's an amazing thing to think that this team is just 1-1. They just win all the time. To come off a losing season, one that where you skip the playoffs, what do you have to do as a player that has played at such a high level to be ready to get back to the playoffs?
Well, what they have to do is, I think they have to get themselves ready and play every game like with passion and try to win every game. And what happened last year, we got down when we got behind in the game. There wasn't a good chance we were going to. There's a good chance we were going to lose the game because we just didn't have that fire in us. And I think that some of our key players had off seasons. There's no doubt about it. And there's no excuse. And now we're going to see how they respond this year.
It's the great Tony Esposito, and Tony, as you know, today, single game tickets go on sale for the regular season for the Blackhawks. Dave, what do we need to know?
Well, what you need to know is, let's see, in about 12 minutes, they go on sale at 10 o'clock at ChicagoBlackhawks.com, or you can call Ticketmaster at 800-745-3000. The home opener, Sunday, October 7th, 6 o'clock against Toronto. 19 of the home games will be on weekends. That includes 4 Fridays, 3 Saturdays, 12 Sunday games. And the longest homestand of the season, 4 games, December 12th through December 18th.
All important information. Tony, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my friend.
Well, it's great. The season's starting to approach us. I'm excited about it, and now we're going to see. I think the guys will respond and play much better. And the ideal scenario is I just want to get into the playoffs, and that's a different season once you get into the playoffs. Yep,
right. You got to get in. We've had 2 years of bad taste in our mouth. It's time for something good. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, there you go. The great Tony Esposito.
Yeah, how great is that?
Nobody better than Tony. Was there ever anybody better than Tony? I'm talking about a person and a goalie and a guy who got hit in the head with pucks a lot. There's nobody better.
That's, I think, very well said.
Yes, that's what I thought you'd think.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Bill and Wendy will join us in just a second.
You just said gas prices creeping up towards Labor Day. They're creeped.
What are they now?
I went this weekend. It was $3.50.
So they have snuck up again.
Yeah. Well,
That's a quarter higher than it was last week.
I'm downtown, so it's going to be more near the expressways and stuff, but it's just like, whoa. Thanks, Obama.
You're right. It is his fault. I have a story for you if you need money for gas, Justin. Okay, when you go in to buy a lottery ticket, don't leave until you win. Keep buying tickets until you win. It's a system. Fred Bastardo. I'm not making the name up. Fred Bastardo went into the El Ranchero liquor store in Hanford, California to buy a lottery ticket this weekend. He told the clerk, I'm not leaving until I get a winner. He was buying something called the Mystery Crossword Scratchers for $10 a ticket. Fifth ticket popped for $750,000.
There you go. To be behind that guy in line.
$750,000.
I just want to get this Mountain Dew, man. Can we speed up this lotto process?
Yeah, and to me, there should be a person that's a dedicated lottery person in every convenience store, and you can't buy lottery tickets unless Helen's on duty, because it takes four frickin' ever.
Yeah, that's my experience with lotto, is being behind the guy who's doing exactly that, buying ticket after ticket.
And if you win $750,000, it's even more annoying. You know, you go into a casino and you try to time it where you figure out which slot machine is hot. Can you figure out which convenience store clerk is hot? Or which convenience store lottery machine is hot? Can you time those as well? I don't know.
The gas station across the street? Do you try that one if you tried the other one last week?
Run around.
Right.
And here's a story I know you're going to like, Dave. A woman left boxes of tennis balls for dogs to play with in memory of her late pet. And it's gone viral. Everybody's overwhelmed
And she was overwhelmed by the reaction. Jennifer McKnight came up with a tribute to her Staffordshire Cross Loki after he died last month. She also left posters on the Kelvin Walkway in Glasgow, Scotland, urging owners to cherish their time with their dogs.
Oh, that's nice.
The box of tennis balls for other dogs to play with in memory of her own.
I would do the same thing for my childhood dog, Benny. But what I would do instead is I would just let dogs run free in the neighborhood as a tribute to Benny, how he used to run free in the neighborhood.
Just go around open fence doors and
open everyone's fence door.
Was he a runner?
Oh, it was a beagle. And he would trick you. He'd be sitting there and he'd be like, oh, hey, oh, maybe I'll do a little slower on the leash. And boom, he was gone.
We had a thing this weekend in the neighborhood. Nothing will attract, I don't know, the humanity side of people like a missing dog from a little kid.
Yeah.
So I'm playing golf on Saturday afternoon, and I can't help but notice in this neighborhood that a lot of people on the golf course on bicycles. This is not a golf course where you ride bicycles. This is a golf course. And four or five go by, and then a guy sort of is wandering around staring off. And I go, you lost? What's going on? It was the father of the girl who lost their dog. Oh. And the dog at that point had been gone for 3 or 4 hours. Dog's name was Red. So then I started paying a little more attention, a little closer attention. And I realized there were people wandering all over the property going, Red! Red! I thought it was some nickname for somebody playing golf.
Right.
But the show of support for everybody was, frankly, very impressive. Now,
they find a dog?
I don't know. They weren't looking yesterday, so I assume that they did. Red got away on Red's leash.
They should do an Amber Alert caught. For dogs. Like that could be a new.
Would it be like a puppy chow alert?
Yeah, puppy chow alert.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful. And if anybody knows the story of Red, let me know. I'd like to know if Red was found.
Was Red found?
I hope so.
Tonight at 10.
Same here. Has Ozzy ever made a break for it?
No, outside? No, thankfully.
Ozzy
no.
knows where the food is.
Yeah, he knows he's well taken care of in our house.
That's what I'm talking about. Bill and Wendy are here. How are you guys?
Wonderful. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. Just fine. Bill, you look frightened. Are you okay?
You do look frightened.
I'm scared. I'm frightened.
About the dog?
Yeah. What a scary story.
I know you're not a big dog guy, but
not a big dog guy.
Wouldn't you help a little girl who had her dog and her dog was lost?
Yeah, absolutely. I would help. I would be so happy to help out. Whatever I could do, I would.
You would do it for a little girl.
Of course.
You're a jerk.
How did your girls grow up without a dog?
We told them that all the dogs our house was in a zone that did not allow dogs.
No zone.
And they questioned it. They said, how come they have dogs next door on that side and on that side? I go, because of the zoning laws. I can't.
Take it up with the alderman.
It's the alderman.
Let me ask you a question. At some point, you're going to be a grandfather, which Mary Vandevold will back me up on is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, she's also a grandfather.
And a good one. So when you're a grandparent, one of your two beautiful daughters is married, and she has kids, and they get a dog. Now, the only way you're going to see the grandkid or your daughter at this point is to go to the house with the dog. What happens?
This is a pretend story, right? This isn't real. This is
and
just...
you may have to dog sit for your grandpuppy.
So in other words, visiting privileges for the grandchild.
You'd be happy this is the worst condition. Thing that happens in your life.
You've just
right?
given Bill something to worry about for the next 3 hours.
It's weird. He's rolling around on the floor smelling his tail.
This is a hallway with two doors, and one has snakes and one has spiders.
Have we ever determined why you have this dog phobia?
It's not a phobia. Afraid. Yeah, I'm not afraid of him.
He just doesn't want to share his home with them.
Dislike.
I feel the need to defend him because everybody said, how can you hate dogs? He doesn't hate them. He just doesn't want them.
Just don't like them. And it's not just dogs. It's cats and fish and elephants and
what
ducks.
About a dog with a syringe?
That would be cool.
Don't you have a guinea pig, though, or something?
We had a rabbit.
Oh, you didn't like that either?
You prefer to have a rabbit in your house as opposed to a dog? What's wrong with you?
It wasn't my decision.
Okay.
Believe me.
They're starting small.
Yeah.
What are you doing today?
A whole bunch of things.
Helping that girl find her dog.
All those things, what's your favorite?
Some travel tips.
Don't
with
hold
Johnny
back.
Jets.
What is it? Oh, okay.
Right. And we're going to talk about the Midnight Circus that happens here in Chicago, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's a cool. Midnight Circus.
That's cool. See ya tomorrow.